Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMA Career and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And we are talking with Deborah Weiss Ford, managing shareholder for Jackson Lewis. And they're a law firm all over the country, but she is based in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and a frequent guest of the HR Power Hour. Deb, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to be on the show. Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Well, it's great. And boy, nothing's changed since we've talked, Debbie. Nothing.
Nothing important.
Nothing important is going on out there in the world today. But I think we can, you know, very comfortably say that there has been a big shift. And there's a lot of things that are going to happen in 2017 with a Trump presidency. And whether you are for or against Trump is not the point. It's really about what possible workplace challenges or workplace changes or laws or regulations that might happen and what people can expect here in 2017 and beyond. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. What do you think?
Well, I think that's right. January 20, 2017, we're going to have a new president, and both houses of Congress will be led by Republican majorities. So I think we're in for a wild ride. I think it's going to be unpredictable, and I think it's going to keep you and me very busy.
Well, that's a good thing, I suppose, from that perspective. Though I will say over the last 8 years, we haven't been not busy. Let's be honest about that.
That's true.
So let's look at what we think may be happening in terms of, you know, some of the things that may be delayed, some of the things that may change. Give me a little bit of what's your first thing in terms of what you think you were going to do.
Well, I think overall, President-elect Trump has stated that he's got an intention to reverse or eliminate many of Obama's initiatives and employee-friendly enforcement positions and rules. So I think right off the bat, we can expect to see an administration that is business-oriented and that will look, as Trump says, pretty much on day one to try to roll back some of the Obama initiatives and regulations that have been enacted. So what's difficult to predict, though, I think, is that in part we can all say that Trump was successful because he was able to get workers to vote for him. And that means that although some of his ideas seem to be anti-worker, he did get support from many workers. So one has to wonder whether there will be some unexpected support for worker-friendly ideas, such as paid maternity leave, maybe an increase in the federal minimum wage. And experts who have been opining about this ad nauseum, as you know, really differ on what they think President Trump will do. So I think the first thing that we should probably look at is the procedural considerations and what Trump can do to alter the landscape that's left by Obama.
So, you know, you're right in the sense that he really had a populist movement back him. And that is to say that, you know, some of the labor unions and some of the labor people actually supported him in terms of some of these efforts. And he's not in the sense, or at least perceived to be, not in the sense we won't know until it happens, a true, if you want to call it, conservative. He's more of the middle of the road, kind of got a populist and a business message. And that's kind of what you're discussing here today.
I think that's right. And so really, from the outset, there are several different avenues that he could take to change the landscape. I mean, he could work with a Republican Congress to defund some of the enforcement of the rules that he has said publicly he does not support. He could direct the agencies to issue new regulations to modify those in place, which is fairly easy for him to do. And he could work with Congress, of course, to pass legislation. And that's an interesting prospect because there will be 52 Republicans in the Senate, and that is not enough to beat the filibuster, which, of course, needs 60 votes to do that. So I think immediately what we may see are some executive orders and actions that he can do immediately to rescind some of the policies he said that he doesn't support.
Well, what are some examples of some of the things that you might or is being projected to be things that would be rescinded?
Sure. So one of the first things I think we'll be seeing is the Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces executive order. And that, of course, was recently enjoined nationwide by the Texas District Court, which has been very active, as you know. And basically what that is, it's known as the blacklisting rule, and it's a controversial rule that was passed under Obama that requires federal contractors to disclose adverse findings and decisions related to their compliance with federal and state labor and employment laws. And it empowers the federal agency to deny contracts to employers who are deemed to lack a satisfactory record of integrity and business ethics. And Trump has already said that he completely disagrees with this rule. So I think that we will probably see this rule go away. It's already been enjoined anyway, and that's likely to disappear under Trump, even if it's not set aside by the appellate court.
Okay, so we have that. We also have some issues having to do with federal contractors.
We do. I mean, and that's going to be interesting to see what he will do with that. You know, I think what you're talking about is the Obama executive order, which requires government contractors to provide 7 days of paid sick leave per year. And President-elect Trump has already said that he doesn't really agree with that law. I mean, frankly, that the way that law is written, it is actually very confusing, and how it will play with state and local laws is a bit of a quagmire anyway. So I think most commentators expect that that law may go away. But again, we have this interesting issue, as you pointed out, with Trump being elected as a populist president, and this is a act that may be very appealing to workers, yet it is something that we know that Trump disagrees with because he has said that.
What other areas in terms of executive orders do you think he could immediately make an impact within maybe the first 100 days?
Well, I think we could see some issues with the Department of Labor, with the EEOC, with the OFCCP, OSHA, and the NLRB. And all of those agencies, I think, are looking right now to try to figure out what will happen. So, you know, if you want to, we can sort of start with the EEOC and talk about the different initiatives that we think are going to be rolled back under Trump.
Sure, let's start there. So the EEOC is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, for those who may not know. And so talk to us a little bit maybe first about what do they cover, and then we can talk about some of the things that they may be rolling back.
Right. So under Obama, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has been extremely aggressive in enforcement efforts, and it has intentionally pursued certain targeted areas, such as criminal background checks, LGBT protections, systemic discrimination. All of those have been target opportunities for the EEOC to say to employers, look, you need to look at these programs carefully and decide whether or not they are discriminatory. So, for example, when we talk about systemic discrimination, that really means a pattern or practice where discrimination has a broad impact in the industry, so that a company could engage in, for example, discrimination barriers in hiring, in recruiting. When a company does a reduction in force, you could be looking at age issues, and the EEOC has been extremely aggressive under President Obama in making sure that employers are more in tune with discriminatory issues. And that we expect under President Trump will likely change. I think we're all expecting that we are going to see a very different outlook on the EEOC.
Am I not correct in remembering that didn't the EEOC even go after a company without any complaints?
It did. It did. It's been extremely aggressive. It has been looking for various issues to take up. For example, the transgender issue. The EEOC has been very aggressive in looking into those discriminatory areas, and actually, without even a complaint, has been going out and looking for various issues that it can take up to try to make some widespread changes.
Okay, so we'll assume that they're going to curtail their efforts a little bit. Also, I believe that President Trump will be able to appoint new commissioners, correct?
He'll be able to appoint new commissioners. We certainly will see that. What we're expecting is that these commissioners will probably change what's known as the Strategic Enforcement Plan. So what that means is that the EEOC will issue periodically strategic enforcement plans for various fiscal years. And under Obama, the plan was revised fairly recently for fiscal years 2017 and 2021. And really, the federal agency was looking at six different broad enforcement priorities that was laid out in the plan. And we expect that those six different areas will probably not be too much of interest to President Trump. So likely that that strategic plan is going to change and probably fairly rapidly.
We also have Congress, which has the power of the purse. And, you know, this, what would you expect that to happen in terms of the EEOC itself?
Well, we've got a Republican Congress, so I would expect that we will see fewer funds that are going to be allocated towards the EEOC enforcement efforts. I would expect that Congress will not be terribly interested in some of the emphasis right now that the EEOC has put on various priorities. For example, inflexible leave policies under the ADA. We've talked about that on other programs with you before, and that has been a very challenging issue for employers now for several years. And that may change. It may take some time for that to change, but I think we're all expecting that we will likely see some changes along those lines.
You mentioned the new Strategic Enforcement Plan, or SEP. What do you think are going to be the new emphasis set forward on several priorities? What do you think they're going to be making those priorities?
Well, I think we're probably going to roll back to the Bush administration years where we weren't seeing aggressive initiatives, and rather we were seeing more enforcement. So that if somebody filed a complaint, EEOC does an investigation, makes a determination of whether or not there was discrimination or harassment, and takes appropriate action. And I think we'll see more of that and less of an aggressive approach to actually look for issues to deal with. So that is what I think is going to change. I think we'll see changes along the ADA and the inflexible leave policies. As I said, I think we'll be looking at possible changes with the joint employer relationship. I mean, I would expect that that's going to change somewhat. And then the current EEOC has been very interested in discrimination against Muslims, Arabs, Middle Eastern people, people of South Asian descent. And I expect that we will not see as much focus on that initiative as well.
What other areas do you think will be high priorities for the Trump administration in the EEOC focus?
Well, I think that there's not going to be a lot of priority with the EEOC. I don't think we're really going to see the Trump administration be too interested in the agency other than to roll back certain initiatives and to make it, as Trump would put it, more business-oriented, because that's a dispute that Trump has with the EEOC, likely with the DOL, and that is a feeling that the free market should control and that there should not be as much regulation. So I think what he will want to do probably is to roll back some of the initiatives and some of the efforts that the EEOC has made on a variety of different topics. For example, the EEOC has been very interested in retaliation issues, national origin issues, pregnancy discrimination, and so much so that to the point where we have seen numerous EEOC guidance. They have published written guidelines for employers to follow. Many have come out this year, as you know. And I think we'll see a lot less activity along those lines.
Well, when you're thinking about how employers should handle these changes, in other words, is it really a wait-and-see attitude, though, with the EEOC still?
I think it is. I think from an employer's perspective, business as usual, I think employers should go ahead and continue to do what they're doing, which is continuing with training, continuing to update policies, continuing to be aware of the various laws regarding discrimination and harassment, and doing the same thing that the employer has always done, which is maintain an environment where discrimination is not in the workforce and harassment is not in the workforce, and if there are issues, that you're going to investigate and deal with the issue immediately. And I wouldn't change that. I just think that employers now really need to follow what is going on and likely will go on in the first 90 days to 100 days with the Trump administration, because I think we could see some pretty fast and furious issues coming up.
One of the other things that the EEOC did is it issued pay data reporting rules as of September 29 this year. And this was these reporting rules on the EEO-1, basically, to include W-2 earnings and work hours for all employers. So what's your take on whether this will actually go into effect in March of 2018 or whether you think it's going to be rescinded?
So that's a good question. That will apply to employers who have 100 or more employees, and as you said, it's a pretty significant change, and it has been a very controversial change to the EEO-1 pay data reporting. These rules are not scheduled to take effect until March of 2018, and the purpose of it is to basically assist the EEOC in investigating compliance with equal pay laws. So that for the first time, the EEOC and the OFCCP would have comprehensive employee pay data, allowing the agencies to effectively target employers for systemic pay discrimination investigations. That's what the point of it is. So, first of all, it's not going to take place until March of 2018. So it's unclear whether this will be an immediate priority. But I think what most of us see is that the Trump administration likely will rescind the changes before reporting is due in 2018, or could very well revise the reporting requirements to ease the burden. There's been a lot of lobbying by employers to get this changed anyway, and so I think we'll see some changes to this as well.
We're talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford, managing shareholder for the law firm Jackson Lewis, down in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, even though they cover it worldwide. Actually, is it worldwide, Deb? Or is it U.S.?
Not worldwide, but
I gave you a bigger platform. Look at that, a bigger platform. Look at that. But definitely throughout the United States. We're talking with her, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOP 100.5 FM and 1310 AM. And we'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And you're listening to us on News Talk, WLOB, 1310 AM and 100.5 FM. You know, we're talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford today. She is the managing shareholder for the law firm of Jackson Lewis, and we're talking about workplace law under a Trump presidency. What to expect? And there's quite a bit of change coming, Deb, don't you think?
I do. I think it's going to be a wild ride.
Well, you know what? That's okay. Keeps us busy. We'll have plenty to do.
No complaint.
We talked a little bit about in the last segment some of the changes we think that are going to be potentially happening in regards to the EEOC. Now let's talk about the NLRB, or the National Labor Relations Board. There is an area that I think will have major changes. What's your take?
I do, too. Completely agree with you. So the NLRB is a five-member board, and that is typically composed of two members from each political party, plus a fifth from the president's party. So right now, there are two Democratic members and one Republican member. And these board appointments must be confirmed by the Senate. So one of President-elect Trump's priorities will be to fill the cabinet and other top agency positions, including the board. So under Obama, as we have talked about many, many times, the National Labor Relations Board, which enforces the National Labor Relations Act, drastically changed existing policies and really made a significant headache for lots of employers in many, many different areas, which include handbooks, policies, elections. And the board has been very aggressive, extremely controversial, and there's been a fair amount of angst in the business community about the board. So I think we'll see some very significant changes here.
No, I think there really are. Now, you said that there are two seats open on the board right now?
That's right.
So were they held over, or what's their thought process in terms of getting those filled? Is there any concern about that?
Well, it's just been very, very difficult for Obama to get pretty much anything done. I mean, he's been blocked in many, many attempts. So those two seats have been open for a while, and a third is scheduled to open up next year. So now everything, of course, is on hold. We're only, a month away or so from the from January 20. But those open seats will be, of course, filled by Trump appointees, and so immediately we will see, I think, a much more business-oriented NLRB.
Well, that can work in many different directions, but what do you think the majority will likely revisit in terms of the new rules and decisions that will be coming out of it?
So lots of things are going to happen. I think that there are numerous areas that we're going to see some fairly significant changes. The first of those changes is likely to be with class action waivers, and already we have a split among circuits, several of them, but most prominently the 7th and 8th Circuit have split in whether or not the class action waivers are enforceable. And so that's an issue that is ripe for the U.S. Supreme Court, but the question is going to be whether or not employers can use these class and collective action waivers, whether they are lawful or not. And so I would expect from a Trump perspective that he would want to say that the employment class action waivers would be lawful under the NLRA. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But that's a major change that we're all very interested in looking at, because that's a big issue for an employer.
No, there's no question. And just like the EEOC, we also have the issue about joint employers.
So we'll see, I think, some changes in that. As most people know, the Browning-Ferris decision, which came out in August of 2015, under that, the NLRB adopted a new joint employer standard, which basically involved a two-part broad test, and that is whether there's a common law employment relationship and whether the potential joint employer possesses what's known as sufficient control over an employee's essential terms. So this has been a pretty big issue for staffing companies, for franchisees, and I think that we will see some fairly significant changes. Trump has already said that he has disagreed with Browning-Ferris and disagreed with the current NLRB position, which basically gives a broad scope to joint employment relationships. So I think we will see a fairly major change to that.
What else in regards to maybe temporary workers do you think might be included?
I think we'll see some changes to that, too. Now the board, and it was, of course, very, very controversial, the inclusion of temporary workers in bargaining units for those with unions, and that was a controversial issue, and I think we'll probably see a rollback in what is properly included in a bargaining unit and what is not properly included. And I think the issue of temporary workers, probably under a Trump administration, would say that temporary workers should not be included in the bargaining units.
Okay, so playing along with the union part, there is this quickie election thing that has really been put forth, and the NLRB has been a big part of. Where do you see that going?
I think that's going to be gone as well. Again, Trump and some of the nominees who he is trying to have head various departments and various cabinet posts have already said that the quickie election rules, and basically that requires employers within 2 business days after the elections details are finalized to provide it to the NLRB regional director. And the point of that has been to make it easier for employees to organize and to be recognized as a bargaining unit. And so the quickie election rules, I think, are going to go away at some point. How much of a priority that is, I'm not really sure. But I do expect that we will see a rollback of that.
Okay. So one of the other things that I know is the question about the concerted activity. Talk a little bit about that.
So I think we'll see some changes in that as well. So the issue is that under the present NLRB, the board has been very, very aggressive in granting rights to employees and to try to protect employees from policies that the board has deemed to be violating employees' rights to engage in concerted activity. So to step back, under Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act, which again is what the board enforces, employees have the right to engage in concerted activities for the mutual aid or protection. So in other words, I should be able to talk to you, my co-employee, about various policies at work, various things that I don't like at work, and when you stop me from doing that, that could be an unfair labor practice because you're interfering or you're coercing me and my rights to exercise my Section 7 rights. So what that has meant with this board has been unprecedented, and that means that the board has gone out of its way to look at employer policies, handbooks, other type of policies, to determine whether or not certain policies violate the National Labor Relations Act. In other words, do they violate my right to engage in concerted activities? So we've seen that in numerous policies that basically some policies will say that you can't talk about your salary, which would be unlawful, or you can't make maybe misleading remarks, which may be interpreted by an employee to mean that I can't talk to my coworker about the terms and conditions of employment. And when an employer puts that red light out and says, no, you can't do this, you can't talk about this, you can't say that, you can't engage in improper conduct, that could be a violation of the act. And this board has been very aggressive for the last couple years in saying to employers that you need to revise your policies because an employee could think that they are not allowed to engage in protected activities.
Well, this was also a big discussion having to do with social media and the board even putting out a sample policy, correct?
That's correct, yep. The board has been really very aggressive in saying to employers, look, you know, this policy is no good. It violates the act. And the board has gone to many efforts to issue memoranda, to issue sample policies, saying to an employer, your policy is not okay because it violates Section 7 of the NLRA, and it is a violation. But this policy is okay. And keep in mind that this applies to union and non-union employers. So it's not just the union employers. So it has had broad and far-reaching implications for employers.
One of the other things that might be affected is the definition of an appropriate bargaining unit. What's your take on that?
I think we'll see some changes in that as well. I think that the board has been quite expansive in how it has defined bargaining units. There was a case with Macy's, the department store, in 2016 that I think is up on appeal now. But basically, I think we'll again see some tightening of that. And I think we'll see some more business-friendly, business-oriented bargaining unit policies that are probably going to get promulgated.
One of the other areas is in the college and university area, and this has to do with faculty, graduate students, and student athletes, and their ability to either unionize or have statuses that are different than they have always been. This might even apply to interns or things like that. Where's your take on that?
Yep, we'll see some changes with that, I think, as well. There was a fairly important decision in this area regarding Columbia University. I believe that was August of 2016. And basically it ruled that student assistants had the right to unionize at private colleges and universities. And so that's a very controversial issue. I mean, this is an issue that's been before the board many, many times over the years. But the student assistants did win this right to unionize. And the ruling was that the students had a common law employment relationship with their university as statutory employees under the National Labor Relations Act. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes and a fair amount of litigation in this area as well.
What other areas do you see the NLRB making potentially additional changes or leaving in place?
Well, you know, I think we'll see this issue of misclassification, which has been a signature of the current NLRB under Obama, this whole issue of whether a worker is an independent contractor or an employee. I think we're going to see some rollback from that. The board and the courts and the legislatures actually have been fairly aggressive in saying to employers, no, this worker is really an employee and is misclassified as an independent contractor. And as you know, there's been a lot of state and federal litigation along those lines, including the board being very interested in this as well. So I think we could very well see a reverse of that position. I think that we will see a more business-oriented approach from Trump, but again, keeping in mind what we've said several times, and that is that in part he was elected on this populist position with many blue-collar workers feeling that he would be better for them, and there is a conflict between those two positions, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It most certainly will. One of the other areas, now that we've talked about the NLRB, is the Department of Labor. And I would certainly agree with you in the fact that we expect the DOL to be more business friendly. But what does that really mean, do you think, in terms of what they're going to be really doing in terms of policy or shifts?
Well, I think we're going to go back to what we saw in the Bush administration, and that was a more business friendly shifting the focus to achieving compliance rather than having aggressive enforcement. Because for the past 8 years, we really have seen very aggressive attempts to enforce various policies. And I think we'll shift back to more of a reactive approach as opposed to a proactive approach. You know, the new appointee, or, you know, if he gets confirmed, Andrew Puzder, to head the DOL, has already made many, many comments about the DOL and the various policies that it's promulgated over the years. So, you know, I think we'll see some fairly significant changes.
Well, certainly one of the things that will be immediately affected is the FLSA. And we certainly know that the Texas District Court has put an injunction on it. And we certainly don't know what will eventually going to be happening in terms of it, because it could be ruled even before the administration gets in. But I'm just trying to – what do you think your takes on that, irregardless of what the court decides?
So that's a really difficult issue for employers. And, of course, you know, to give our listeners a little bit of background – So the changes had been worked on by the current DOL for over 2 years, and those were changes to, of course, increase the minimum salary threshold for exempt employees from $23,660 to $47,476, which is actually a 113% increase. And so we were all ready to rock and roll. This was going to go into effect on December 1st, and then the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the Texas District Court issued a nationwide injunction enjoining the DOL from implementing and enforcing the final overtime rule. So where we are now with that is that that decision has been appealed to the Fifth Circuit on December 2nd, and a briefing schedule came out earlier this week, and the case needs to be briefed by January 31st. So that means that Trump will be in office before we'll see any play. And that has been a nightmare for employers, many of whom, or if not most of whom, had already made changes. And to walk back those changes is difficult. And also, when this decision came out, most employers had made the changes because the payroll was the following week. So it was in the middle of the payroll period, and to walk that back was going to be a problem. So what we have is a situation where the Texas lawsuit is ongoing, but it's likely that President-elect Trump is going to want to pull back on those changes. You know, it's very unlikely that he's going to agree with a 113% increase. Whether he will agree with any kind of a change or try to modify it or maybe have more incremental increases over a 2-3 year period remains to be seen. There are certainly some Republicans in Congress who have interest to do some bills, all with varying ideas of how best to approach this. It's likely that this bill or this overtime regulation probably won't go into effect the way it has been enacted by the current DOL.
We're speaking with Deborah Weiss Ford. She is a managing shareholder with the law firm Jackson Lewis, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Deborah Weiss Ford. She's the managing shareholder at the law firm Jackson Lewis, a nationwide law firm that's a great sponsor of the HR Power Hour. We thank them very much for that, Deb. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hey, you know, we've been talking about basically what we can expect from a Trump administration in regards to employment law. And we've gone through, obviously, talking about the EEOC. We've talked about part of the DOL, which we're talking about now. And so what I'd like to do is kind of continue on the Department of Labor side for a few minutes. They offer a lot of opinion letters. Where do you think Trump administration will take the DOL in terms of, you know, setting out an agenda or opinion items?
So under President Obama, the DOL stopped its very long-standing practice of issuing opinion letters, which were signed by the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division. And that was sort of surprising because those opinion letters are very helpful, at least to lawyers who work in this field, to figure out what the advice is. But in any event, that was discontinued. And I think most of us are expecting that we will see more formal official opinion letters regarding the application of the FLSA and the FMLA to be restored.
Well, that will be helpful for a number of reasons, right? It kind of gives you some guidelines.
That's exactly right. And so they have been, at least for me, very important guidelines that I have used. They're advisory opinions. They help explain to clients who are in difficult situations of what the advice would be from the administration. And although they don't have precedential value, they're still important. The guidance is important. So that could be a good thing that may happen.
Well, the Obama administration did put out two significant administrator interpretations, especially in the last couple of years, regarding joint employment and other independent contractor statuses. Where do you see those efforts going in this current administration?
Yeah, well, I think with the joint employment, so there's been an effort, as we were talking about earlier, to consider many different entities to be joint employers, which has some fairly significant implications for employers. And that would be staffing companies, temporary agencies, franchisees. And we've already had Trump and Andrew Puzder, who is being nominated to head the U.S. Department of Labor, we've already had them come out and basically say that they really don't agree with the joint employment status. So I think we'll see somewhat of a rollback of that initiative, which may happen in the first year of the administration.
How about the OFCCP?
So the OFCCP, which is the Office of Federal Contracts and Compliance Programs, and the The government, it's called the General Accounting Office, so the GAO, issued a report which was extremely critical of many controversial OFCCP enforcement methods. And so I would expect that we'll see the Trump administration to move away from the aggressive, controversial enforcement mechanisms that have been used. And this is mostly for federal contractor compliance, and it's likely we'll see some changes along those lines. I mean, you know, as we're talking this through, of course, we're talking about a lot of changes, and I think we'll see some large changes, some small changes. The order of it is really anyone's guess. What is going to be more important than another initiative is really hard to say. But all of these things are likely going to be, at some point, looked at fairly closely and probably changed, again, more with this idea that the Karen administration has not been business-friendly. That's what President-elect Trump would say. Whether that's true or not is a debatable issue. But I think we'll see a rollback of more an agenda of deregulation, including, you know, as we talked about, paid sick leave, minimum wage, pay transparency, sex discrimination, LGBT issues. I think we're going to see a rollback of those type of things.
You know, one of the things that we talk about in terms of this is the fact that this, as you said, takes time. And so with the exception of some specific items, many of these could take years to roll back some of these things. I remember hearing one of the administration people talking about, you know, it's not as simple as it sounds to roll back all this stuff. So it does take time to make that happen.
Absolutely. I think it is easy to roll back an executive order. Those can just be rescinded. So those are easy. But rolling back major pieces of legislation, things that are rather complicated, that took a long time to get implemented, that affect a lot of people, that's a whole different story.
Well, one of the areas which I think will be probably, we know, a huge and top priority is the Affordable Care Act and health care. And that has been said that on day one, there's going to be some real push in terms of making a change to the Obamacare, as it's called. What's your take in terms of, you know, how that's going to take place, how that affects employers, and how that affects in general?
So I think the ACA is going to be one of the more interesting issues with the Trump administration. It's complicated. It is going to be very difficult to dismantle, difficult to replace it, and so far we really haven't heard of any replacement options, and it has affected millions of people who are now receiving insurance that did not before the act. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Coupled with that is that the Republican leaders in Congress have different ideas about the ACA. So on the campaign trail, we heard a lot of we're going to get rid of it and Obamacare is going to be done on the very first day of the new administration. Of course, that's not realistic, and that's likely not going to happen, because to dismantle it and making it even more difficult when you have so much disagreement in your own party, it's going to be a tough, tough issue. But having said that, I think it's pretty clear that there certainly will be some focus on making some changes to the ACA. And what that is really anyone's guess.
One of the other areas which was, of course, a huge issue in the campaign is immigration. And with the designate of Jeff Sessions as the potential attorney general, I think that that's certainly going to be an area which will be focused. And I know part of the area for employers are the visas. That is a huge issue for some employers. What do you think about that, and where do you think that's going to be going?
So this is really going to be interesting as well. Of course, immigration was an enormous issue on the campaign trail, and you're right, the Attorney General designee, Jeff Sessions, is a sharp critic of the Obama administration and has been for a very long time on immigration policies. But interestingly, the potential new head of the DOL, Puzder, has a different perspective on that. I mean, he has been quoted as saying that immigrants play a vital role in growing U.S. businesses, spurring innovation, creating jobs, and so he is a more moderating voice on this issue. So we're going to have, I think, a lot of different ideas and different policies. So on the visa issues, there's lots of things that could happen. Here's what immigration lawyers are looking at. So the new administration could temporarily suspend or delay the issuance of visas to persons from certain countries and regions like Syria, Libya, Iraq. That has come up on the campaign trail, and so, you know, we think that we may see that. We may see that individuals from designated high-risk areas or who've traveled to such countries may face longer delays than currently to obtain visas for both short and long-term travel to the U.S. I think a lot of immigration experts think that on the issue of H-1B visas, Trump has been, let's say, inconsistent, but most recently has stated an intention to ask the Department of Labor to look into possible misuse of H-1B visas to replace U.S. workers with temporary foreign workers, particularly in IT jobs, which would, the administration would be against. So I think we're going to have lots of different issues along these lines. We also could see some issues with the TN visas, which are available to professionals from Canada and Mexico, and that's created by NAFTA. And we all know that, you know, Trump has said many, many, many times that he wants to eliminate and renegotiate NAFTA, and that could jeopardize these visas. So we'll see issues along those lines. We'll see issues probably with the current E-Verify law, which is voluntary, so that could be mandated. So, you know, Dave, this is going to be wild and wacky, I think, and one of the things that many, many people are looking at to see what will happen.
Well, voting has consequences. And so the reality is that is the direction which we're going to be heading. We're talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford. She's the managing shareholder at Jackson Lewis in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and presented by cmacareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. We're talking with Deborah Weiss-Ford, managing shareholder at the law firm of Jackson Lewis, and we're talking about what a Trump administration has to do with you in terms of your employees, as employers, and what that means in terms of the next few years. Deb, we've talked a lot today about some of the things and the major changes, but I'll tell you, there's probably one biggie that trumps all of these, no pun intended, and that's the Supreme Court appointee.
Well, that's correct. You know, lots of these things, people who are listening could say, hey, doesn't apply to me, but the court, the U.S. Supreme Court, applies to all of us and will affect all of us, and since they are lifetime appointments, it's going to have a major effect on many, many different things. So, fairly clear, due to the ages of the current justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, that President-elect Donald Trump will appoint at least one new justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. And don't forget that he will have the opportunity to fill numerous federal judicial vacancies. So the type of judges that he will appoint to the court will likely be controversial, as usually they are in any administration, and probably a dogfight to get people actually through the Senate.
There's no question about that, but it will have a major effect. And one of the things that I want to make sure we cover as we wrap up the show is paid maternity leave, because this is something that the Trump administration has talked about in terms of proposing, especially because of his daughter Ivanka.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And he has proposed during the campaign requiring employers to provide 6 weeks of full or partially paid maternity leave. Very controversial because it is an employee-friendly policy. Many, many Republicans came out against this and don't agree with this and may try to block it. So we could have a very interesting coalition of people who may be trying to block that legislation. But he has said numerous times that this is something that is important to him and that it will provide benefits to married women, by the way, not single women or men, but only to those who give birth rather than to adopt.
Are there any other areas that you might see that are important for us to know as we wrap up here the show today?
I think the last thing that we should mention is probably the non-compete agreements. The Obama administration has taken many positions that are against non-compete agreements, and there are many state laws that restrict non-competes more and more each year. But that's been an initiative of the current White House, and President-elect Trump has already said that he doesn't necessarily agree with those restrictions. Again, under this guise of being more business-oriented, we can expect maybe to see not as much enforcement or pressure to change non-compete agreements.
Well, we'll certainly see what happens, and of course, there will be responses by the state and local areas that may try to beef up different areas, as always happens. So this is going to be a wild ride in 2017.
Indeed it will be.
Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, Deborah Weiss-Ford, managing shareholder for the law firm of Jackson Lewis in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show, and you can connect with her directly. Again, Debbie, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Dave.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, it's Doug Currier from Veral Dana. I think we all have a general awareness that if an employer says something false about an employee or former employee and puts that person in a bad light, what was said might lead to a claim of defamation. That is one of the reasons why many employers are reluctant to give references because of the fear of having to defend a defamation claim, even when the employer absolutely believes what it is saying is true. And truth is a defense to a defamation claim. What many employers do not realize is that even if what is said is true, the employee may still be able to sue for a different count, invasion of privacy, the unauthorized disclosure for no legitimate reason of private information that would be highly embarrassing to a reasonable person in the employee's shoes. The answer? Protect the privacy of your employees and do not disclose anything that is private in nature without the employee's consent. For further insights and advice, please reach out to Veral and Dana's labor and employment law attorneys.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be doing part one of how not to create problems you are trying to avoid, tips for effective in-house anti-discrimination training. We'll be doing this with the employment attorney, Jim Reedy from Sheehan Finney. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.